Yeah, and so I fall back into my body in the Walking Dead world. I'm still dreaming this whole time, and then I wake up in there, and I just run to the bathroom, and then once I get to the bathroom, that's when I like almost pass out, just because I'm like overwhelmed, and then I wake up into my real body. But the weirdest part was when I woke up into my real body, I couldn't understand. It took me about 30 seconds to a minute to realize who I was, where I was, and like what the person that brought me back to everything was my mom.
Hello and welcome to a very special guest episode with BJ Segura, a filmmaker and ghost hunter who specializes in horror and the supernatural. I had to take a mental health hiatus this week, but Trey carries the torch in a very special and very spooky conversation about ghosts, horror movies, and the powers within us all.
Well, welcome, folks, to Light in the Fog podcast. I am here without my co-host this week. Jenny Mueller is taking a week off, but that just means there are more questions for me to ask our amazing guest today. This is a person I've known almost a decade, I think, at this point.
I think so.
Does that sound about right, BJ?
Yep.
Yeah. So let me give him a proper introduction. This is BJ Segura. He is a filmmaker. He is a podcast producer and host, co-host. He has many co-hosts. He's a paranormal enthusiast, and I feel like enthusiast is kind of too quiet of a word. He's just an all-around horror fanatic. You'll find him at Tales from the Drive-In and Three Haunted Podcasts. He investigates the scary haunted sites. The scarier, the better. He's always down for a good ghost tour. I keep seeing you on social media at all of these different horror film festivals and conferences. So I feel like that's folding into what you're doing. You were just in Scotland, you know, checking out their whole paranormal and horror scene. BJ, you're building an empire for yourself. Was that intentional?
I don't know if it was intentional, but it was definitely something that had been, I mean, there was a time where I just wasn't being creative. And when you're not being creative, you get a little depressed, a little sad, a little, you know. So I think creatives need to be creative. And it's like, just what makes me happy? What are the kinds of things that interest me? And, you know, the paranormal and horror specifically have been always interests of mine, but I didn't go head first into it until about a couple years ago, and just haven't looked back. And I've just done a little bit of everything.
Like, yeah, it's a good fit for you.
Yeah.
So we met at the Colorado Film School, and I was a writing teacher for you, and even then you were writing horror. Did you ever do anything but horror? Was that always your jam?
I think it was always my jam. I mean, I think I maybe would have gotten into a little bit of comedy here and there too, but maybe a little bit of sci-fi as well. But other than that, yeah, it's horror has always been near and dear to my heart, and yeah, it still kind of is. And you know, I'm still probably going to get into some short films as well here in the near future, just because. Why not?
Yeah, absolutely. Why not? Did you feel comfortable like stepping into that mantle of being a horror filmmaker, or do you feel like you had to, I don't know, give yourself permission to really indulge in all of that?
I think honestly, it's just fun. It's not, I don't think it's something that I felt like I needed any kind of permission or anything like that. It was more just like I just needed the people that are also, you know, jazzed about it, people that are just wanting to do it as well and just get their perspective on things and have a, again, for me the biggest thing is the story. If it's not a good story, like what's the point? You know, why waste all this time, you know, on and corn syrup on something, you know? And so like, it's got to have some kind of something. And I always try to do something a little bit different, something a little new, something just a little unique. So that's kind of where I come from. And I think going to the different film festivals and doing the horror cons and things like that have really kind of introduced me to a lot of people who are also into the same kinds of things. So yeah. It's been nice to be able to connect with them and to use them as resources to be able to, you know, just ask questions, be like, so what do you do with this? How long do you spend on like an action sequence, you know, in this horror short that you're doing? That all those little things, like just the makeup, like the different kinds of lighting that you guys would use, like mm-hmm. what locations have you used? Can I borrow those locations?
Yeah, for real. And where you live, there are some amazing locations to go shoot in. And you've been on other people's shoots. And you've done ghost tours and stuff, but I don't want to get ahead of myself. We'll catch up with that in just a minute. So I gotta go, I gotta roll back to a time that you were, you know, just a little kid. And what was the first horror movie that you remember making a big impact on you? What Ooh. Got you into all of this, man?
So I mean, I have to go Nightmare on Elm Street. Okay. So the first one and the third one, Fright Night for sure. But yeah.
Why? Okay. So why the first one and the third one, but like not the second?
Well, I didn't see the second one right away. I think for whatever reason, because I have an older brother who's like 7.5 years older than me. So I would always watch what he watched. And so he always loved the first and the third one. I didn't know why, because I mean, I probably shouldn't have been watching when he was watching them, because I think I was probably like 10 or 11 at the time. And so, yeah.
Good job, older brother. Way to corrupt the young one.
Yeah. So because it's something, it's terrifying, something that attacks you in your dream. Like you don't have any safety anywhere. Like you just fall asleep and then that's it.
Yeah. Yeah. But, and they had such a solid like mythology behind them, which I don't feel like, I mean, they sort of did with the Friday the 13th, but it was just like mommy issues, whereas Freddy had this whole thing going on. So is he one of your favorite horror villains?
Freddy is for sure. Yeah, just the way they made those movies, I think just... specifically the first and the third one, just because of the kills, the way the kills were, they were so creative. And because it's the dreamland, you could do whatever you want. And my favorite kills are when they, you know, the way they bring it into the real world, how they make it happen. And that's how I did one of my cosplays. I actually won an award for it, for dressing up as Philip from the third one. So I don't know if you remember this.
You'll have to explain this one.
So, yes. So they're at a mental institution, and this one of the patients is Philip. He makes marionette puppets, right? And so he falls asleep, and Freddy appears above his bed, slits down his arms and down his legs, and pulls out guts and starts using his guts to pull him through the hallway.
I remember that.
Like a puppet. Yes. And then he leads him to the roof and then snips the things and forces him to jump, basically. And I created that.
Wow.
Yeah. So I had a Freddy above me, connected with like a PVC pipe that was all Freddy, the colors. And then, I had a little light on there. And then I had these yarn things that were connected with, goo, all these types of goop to make it look like guts and everything. And I had magnets to have them attached to my legs and my wrists, and then I would just walk around like that. And yeah, it was pretty intense.
And okay, so that's kind of niche. Like, did people, and also like kind of old school, did people know what the heck you were doing there?
Everybody knew. At the horror festivals specifically, like if you go, maybe I haven't done it at like a fan expo or anything like that, but like I've gone to a couple horror festivals, and yeah, people were just like about it. They're like, oh my God, because it's not something that gets done very much. It's I actually met Heather. I'm terrible with her last name. Lendingkampf, the Nancy. She plays Nancy in
the final girl.
Yes. And she, I brought, wore the costume and got a picture with her and everything, and she loved it.
Oh, that's
great.
Fantastic.
So,
yeah, this is what I think a lot of people don't know about horror fans is y'all are some goofy folks. Like, you fan boy or girl out more than almost anybody I have ever seen.
Yes. Yes. I mean, that's why I go to these festivals. I mean, I've gone to them so much that I've become kind of part of the crew now. And so I've been able to help actually this past Colorado Festival of Horror help film some of the celebrities they brought in for interviews, which was really fun. But also participate in the costume contest as well. So
that's very cool. And I saw that you actually won some of them. That's cool.
Yeah, this past one I did, it was this year, I dressed up. So Alien Romulus came out this year, so I decided to do a costume that was, there was kind of a theme to that. So it was the alien, it was the, from the first one, I think his name is the doctor, one of the guys who dies anyway, his chest burster, but it was from the movie Spaceballs. So I had legs that I made that on the chest burster that would dance, and then I put a little top hat on him, and then I made his mouth move.
Oh my god!
To the hello my baby, hello my honey.
Just like, all right, that deserves a cameo in the movie you're gonna make, I think.
Yeah,
that's amazing. So. You know, and there is such a huge community around it, and you know, I think coming up, I don't know, I'm a little older than you, but there was not a lot of people. So I'm Gen X. What are you? Are you Gen X or are you millennial?
I think I'm borderline okay. Millennial. Yeah. So like 83 was when I was born in September. So I think that's
on the
millennial.
Cusp. On the cusp. Yeah. Right. So, you know, I watched all this stuff and I loved all this stuff when I was a kid, but like there was nobody to talk to about it, you know? It was not, horror was not for children, which is so weird because I really think that the best audience for horror is children. Because our imaginations are just going and we're, you know, like we're seeing things and we, like, I'm one of those people that thinks that we all come into this world with like quite a lot of psychic attunement going on. And then we don't understand it. And if there's nobody to talk to, we seek out sources, you know, to try to inform ourselves. And one of those sources is absolutely 100% going to be horror. Not necessarily because that's what, you know, that's what we're experiencing in our lives, but at least it's that it's another dimension, right? And it's scary. So the horror kind of fits, but like, I wasn't talking about it to anybody like coming. Well, you had your brother, but was there a community for you when you were a kid?
So it was more family, right? So just like cousins and, that kind of thing. So like one of my cousins, that's actually how I was going to start the podcast, is me and her, we're going to do it together. But unfortunately she was killed.
I'm so sorry.
But yeah, it was a really rough situation because it was literally like right before we were going to start the podcast, and we, you know, she was always the type, she was always the family member that you would come over to her house and she would have horror movies in the backyard. Oh. So she would set out all the food.
Wow.
And yeah, it was so much fun. Like, we would always do that, and even though she hated clowns, she would put on Killer Clowns from Outer Space.
Trying to get over my fear. You know, face my fears.
Yes. So, but yeah, I mean, it was family. And then I think because, like you said, it wasn't celebrated nearly as much as it is now. I think, like, especially like my generation and your generation just go to these places to reminisce, to be able to connect with these people that they never did before. They're like, yeah, this was such a big part of my childhood that I didn't really get to share it with anybody. It was almost like a nerdy obsession that, yes, that nobody understood,
yeah,
until now. And so it's now it's just, it's big, big business, basically.
Yeah. You know? Which then, of course, we get all pouty about because we're like, hey, that was our scene. And now, like, kind of everybody is into it. Oh, well. All right. Fine. Come join the party.
Right. Right.
You think?
Because it's like, oh, you don't, you want to hate on them, but you're also like, well, you know what, though? Let me give you a list that maybe, you know, you'll enjoy these too. Because ultimately, you want them to experience what you experienced. Yeah. Just so that, you know.
Yeah. So. Yep, yep, yep. Which is a whole intergenerational weirdness, right? It's like we're territorial, but at the same time, when you have these fan communities, like, the more the merrier, you know, like we're always happy if people know our references, you know, and I do feel like in horror that people do watch backwards. They will go deep into the deep cuts, you know, because they keep hearing. I mean, please, there's not one horror fan I know that hasn't seen The Exorcist and had a very similar experience. Although I think the newer one that impacted folks was Jennifer Carpenter coming backwards down the stairs, Rose something.
Yes, The Exorcism of Emily Rose.
There we go. Those are the two that messed me. The Exorcist, right? Because you talk about all the subgenres, right? Those are probably the two that messed me up the most.
That one's great. I actually just posted something about that on Facebook, right? Just about how she was hearing things. When she was filming that, like basically her radio would turn itself on and off randomly. And then Pearl Jam would, the song Alive would come back. It would just say, I'm still alive over and over again.
Oh no, that is so mean. Did she have a, or do you have any theories about it? Everybody's allowed to spitball.
Yeah, I think that kind of stuff happens, right? Like there's The Omen, there's different films that have had paranormal stuff happen while they were shooting. And yeah, I 100% believe in that kind of situation. And there's just an energy, I think, when you're filmmaking that everybody's, you know, on this common goal to create something. And I think that spirits can attach to stuff like that, especially if it's the tone, right? Like everybody's kind of on the same page. And so if all of that energy is kind of coming together for a story and it's just, they're doing it over and over again, maybe it like triggers some kind of encounter with something. I don't know if they're drawing things in intentionally or unintentionally, or it's what they're doing is like wrong. Like Spielberg bringing in, it wasn't even Spielberg. It was, when they made Poltergeist, right? They used real cadavers, real skeletons instead of fake ones.
Nope. I don't know whose idea that was. Nope.
Right. Why would you do that? It's cheaper.
It's grotesque. Look, man, horror fans are not grotesque people.
Right. But yeah, but if, when you do stuff like that, you're gonna piss off spirits, you're gonna piss off people. Like, it's, you know, you got to be respectful with what you're doing, and you know, for good or for bad, there's gonna be some things that happen. So,
and how long have you believed that, would you say,
the paranormal stuff,
that kind of this theory? Because I think it's a very solid theory. But yeah, like being able to kind of, you know, because I think the Rose one, the exorcism of whatever, Jennifer Carpenter, they shot that like at the place where the real life exorcism took place. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, sometimes in some of the horrors, like they'll, you know, if there's like witchcraft, yeah. And, you know, I always want to make the caveat that like the vast majority of witches are working in light and love, but that doesn't mean that there's not folks out there who connect to darker energies. So if they're like Clive Barker, I feel like he's always messing, like right on the edge, man, right on the edge, and bringing in all right. Like, I can't even get through his books at this point because I feel like his books are almost portals. And I'm like, nope, 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 nope.
Right. Yeah. It's scary. The stuff that you meddle with, that people, filmmakers meddle with. And if you are going in that direction, you have to be careful, especially if you're doing it at places that are considered haunted, mm-hmm. or considered, you know, just places where people have died or just horrible things have happened. So you, I don't know, like, I don't know if I would necessarily film at, you know, an, like an insane asylum. Maybe. I mean, maybe.
Nope.
But,
nope.
But also, before we go in every day, you know, we ground out, we do all the things. And then when we leave, we, you know, we do all the things. We, you know, smudge everything we need to do. That kind of thing.
Make like, your there separations. Would be Don't take anything home. Have you ever taken things home? I mean, you've been to a lot of sites.
I try not to. I definitely try not to. I mean, like, not from like, from like haunted places. I don't think for me, I don't do that. It is one of those things where I'm a little OCD and I feel like that is definitely going to be like, hey, I'm going to bring a spirit home because they're on this knife or something or whatever it is. And we actually had a quick kind of ghost story.
Yes, please.
I was at the Abbey Monastery in Canyon City, Colorado. And this place.
Yeah, I can't go to Canyon. I can't go near. Explain what's up with Canyon City.
So there's a prison there, and they have a prison museum as well, and the prison is still working and everything, and they still have, but they had like a gas chamber that's kind of outside now, so they can like a museum, but then they have this monastery where all these kids grew up in, and from the 1920s to up until the 1990s is when it shut down, and since then it's just been open for, just like weddings and things, but only a few things. And there was talks of people dying there and mysteriously a lot of weird stuff. But also Canyon City is just a weird place. It was like,
It's like, which happened first? Was the place weird? You know, is it a hellmouth? And then, you know, the people who were looking for a place to build one of the worst prisons in America, they're like, this is the place. Or did they build this prison that ended up being horrible, and then it turned the town into a very heavy energy place?
You know, I don't know. I don't know if that's, I think it kind of all happened together, right? The prison was part of it. And then they built the houses around the prison, and then it was just became a weird kind of community that's just very unique in its own way. And actually, fun fact, all of the Colorado license plates with the mountains, that's the landscape, is Canyon City.
Really? Mountains. No way.
Yep.
Fun fact. Yep. All right.
Yeah, which they made at the prison.
Which they made at the prison. So there. It's how they get out, man.
Yes. But back to the story. Yes. At Canyons, so at the monastery, there's like 5-6 different floors, including the basement, and each is long, really long hallways and just weird rooms. Little, some of them are like classrooms, some of them are just whatever rooms. And in the basement, one night, all the lights were off and everything, and we started to get a lot of weird energy, shadow people on the cameras, like all kinds of crazy things going on. And one of the girls that was with us was talking about her family, and they were, you know, it was almost like they were scared. And out of nowhere, this little butter knife, like a half of a butter knife, just appeared like right next to her. Like it was not there before. We were all, cause when we walk through, we kind of look at the floor to make sure we're not going to trip over anything or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it was in the floor was, you know, just a white, almost like a pavement that was just, you know, you would notice something like that. And so it just appeared. And so for whatever reason, we felt like maybe it was given to her by the nuns that were there to protect her from the other spirits that were trying to mess with her. And so she kept it. Yeah. So she kept it, not the, just for that night. And then she returned it back at the end of the night.
Ooh, that's a good one.
It was weird. Like, it was definitely one of those situations where, like, yeah, and what's weird is like you hear things there too. And it's like, what is all this stuff coming from? And it's not something that can be easily explained away. And so that's the fun of going on those investigations.
Right. Have you gotten into, so there's lots of different theories behind, you know, so sometimes it's, you know, the veil is thin, right? So there's this plane of existence, but then there's other planes of existence that are laying right on top of it. And there are places, you know, where the sounds can come through, the energy comes through, the energy first, right? But then, like, you know, maybe you spot something or you hear something. But then there's also like the Shining Hotel in Estes Park, where the big theory there is that it was built on just a ton of crystals. And crystals are used in the recording industry as part of the recording, you know, mechanics. So their thinking is that these things that had happened got caught in a mechanical, I don't even know what to call it, apparatus. It wasn't done on purpose. It's just that the mountain is a bunch of crystal, and therefore it's replaying the memory, but it's not the actual memory bleeding through. Have you heard of this kind of stuff?
Oh yeah. We've definitely talked to people on both of the podcasts about that particular thing, whether it's like an echo or something that's just residual, right? Something that just is there for a little while, or it's there, but it's not, I don't even know. I forget what the exact name of it. It could be just an echo, but basically it's replaying something that has happened in the past. Like there, somebody could have died, and it's just a residual energy that gets played over and over again. But they're not really connecting with anybody that's living. Right. They're just kind of just doing it over and over again. And so that's how you know the difference between that. And actually, if it is an actual haunt, they will look at you, or they will connect with you somehow. It's different. It's a different kind of connection rather than just a sound that you hear every once in a while, kind of thing.
The saying I always use is, good golly, if I can see them, they can see me. Spend a lot of time keeping my head down, you know? So are you at the point now where you're seeing things, you're hearing things, you're obviously experiencing a lot of energy?
So for me, I would say the hearing is newer. For me, mostly it's been energy. It's been feeling. I am a feeler, like 100%. Like that's where I get most of the energy. And I don't know if I want to see, but I definitely feel it. And it comes randomly. But it's not, that's the thing that's kind of, I don't know if it's upsetting, but it's like, I kind of want to be able to tune it a little bit more, to have a little bit more of a, just dial it in, right? Because it's not quite consistent enough yet, which is fine. Because I've basically learned that when you have your gifts, and everybody has gifts, it's not about trying hard necessarily. It's kind of letting it happen, let it come to you at the right time. And also just asking, just being out there, just being like, hey, if there's any messages, or if there's anything that your spirit guides or whatever want to tell you, or how to bring you your gifts, like, ask, and then you'll figure it out.
Yeah, there's like all kinds of layers to that. So for a long time before I had plugged in a more responsible way into whatever all this is, I would watch a lot of those ghost haunting shows because, you know, I was trying to make, you know, just like I watched Friday the 13th, you know, I also watched the Ghost Adventures. There's a British show that was the first one. And then the guys came along here in America. They all have ghosts in the name, but anyway, it doesn't matter. I would be able to feel the energy of things from the TV. And then, and then they would say the thing that I was feeling. And because there's two kinds of feelings, I feel like. One is just the feeling of energy, you know, where you're just like, what's going on? What's going on? I can feel like, you know, same as like they always use, like, you know, somebody like feeling like you're being watched, for example, you know, kind of a feeling of dread. But for me, I go like I go one step further sometimes, where I can actually feel the emotions of whatever it is I'm encountering. So in past lives, for example, if, you know, if somebody was really, really sad, like I'll be crying because I can feel that sorrow, you know, the coming through from that life. So do you connect to those kinds of emotions? Do you feel you do?
Yes. Well, not like you. Like yours is just crazy. That's through the TV or like externally like that.
A demon once connected to me through a text message. Okay. Like this was one of the most messed up things that ever happened. And I remember reading the text message and I saw the demon in it and it saw me from across the world. Even now it gives me goosebumps. Anyway, screens are no protection, friends. Anyway, as you were saying.
Oh yeah. But I feel like some people like yourself are more in tune with their gifts. And so they understand what it is more than somebody like me. Like if I were to read that text, I probably wouldn't get that.
You'd just right? be like, that's messed up. It's different.
Right. but when you read it, you're like, oh, there's something attached to that. And I don't like it. And it's terrible. But yeah, like for me, mine's more of an empath thing with the living for the most part, sometimes with the dead. But yeah, it's more like go to a funeral. If I don't know the people that well, I still bawl my eyes out because I'm just and I just can't do anything. And I did that at my friend's, and it was like a graduation. And you know, obviously it's graduations are fun and everything, but I'm not like, why I started like catching myself. I'm like, why am I getting like super emotional? Like, I'm not going to cry. Like, I'm like, it's not that kind of thing, but like, it was just being around that kind of energy that just, it just came, it just went through me and just, you know, spills out of you when you just fill up too much and then you just start crying.
Yeah. Like, well, you're a creative, you know, and you're a sensitive person. So, I mean, do you consider yourself an empath?
I would say, yeah, that and a dreamer. Because I think,
what do you mean,
dreamer? Everybody's a dreamer. I mean, so I've had, and my mom has this, and so does my brother, but we have like prophetic dreams. We have, dreams that just, I don't know, feel otherworldly. And I feel like I've connected to different things through my dreams. And I think it, and I've talked to people a lot about it. And I think it's because you're, for me specifically, I'm more open to the extra everything because I'm asleep and right. You're closed off to the 3D world. And so once the 3D world's not there, then everything else can come in. And then that's where I'm like very much in tune with all sorts of crazy things. For example, just recently I came head to head with a bald eagle. Bald eagle came in, looked at me. I looked at him. I was scared because like in my dream, it felt so real that I was like, oh my God, there's a massive bald eagle right in front of me. It didn't feel like a dream. And it just put its head right up against mine and started just rubbing its head back and forth.
Okay. Did you do any research? Like what do bald eagles symbolize? And
so, yeah, it's kind of a thing where it's a few different things, but it's like you're trying to, it could be a spirit guide. It could be something telling you to, that you're going on a spiritual journey, that you're starting to open up to things, that you're, lots of different things. Yes. And I was like, when I read it, I was like, oh, that's pretty amazing. And, but yeah, like I would just have so many different dreams. God, like I had a dream just once where I saw a Harry Potter musical with my dad randomly. And, cause I had just talked to somebody about like, have you listened to music in your dreams? Can you hear music in your dreams? And I was thinking about it. I was like, I don't know, probably. And then that night, we went to that musical. And then the next day I talked to my dad about it. And then, he turns on his music and he plays a song. And the only song I could remember from the dream was, a Billie Eilish song. It was Lord. It was Royals from Lord. That's, and yeah, and I had never heard him play that song before, and that was the song, the only song I remember from my dream. I was like, and I asked him, like, yeah, I was like, Dad, why are you playing this? He's like, I love this song. I'm like, you've never played this song in your life. Like, why am I hearing it now? I just dreamt that last night.
So this could have been you traveling through time and hopping forward. This could have just been, you know, the astral plane trading messages across, like, you know, and that within itself could mean a lot of different things. You could have started a whole different timeline where maybe your dad had never actually listened to that song, but now you tweaked a timeline and now he does.
Oh my God, that's crazy. I don't know. I don't know. I definitely need to get my dreams analyzed, or at least get myself analyzed for my dreams.
But in the best possible way. Like, all analysis is good.
Yes. In my world. Yes. Yes. And I do keep a dream journal, so like all of my dreams are on there.
Oh, good.
So it's been, yeah, just dreams. Yeah, so I don't know. There's so much more I could get into with that.
Well, I'm here for it. Like that's what we talk a lot about on this podcast. If you have more to share, I'm so game.
Well, okay. I mean, I have told you about this, but not your listeners. So I had a dream once where it was on Dia de los Muertos last year, and we talked about The Walking Dead earlier. I was in the Walking Dead world. And I was with Rick Grimes, of all people, which was random and funny, but it's like, is he a character? But like, we were walking through and I had gotten bit and we were trying to find somebody, and then we found them. And for whatever reason, I knew I was going to die. So basically I had to be sacrificed for whatever reason. And these indigenous people came up to my body. I was sitting in a chair laying back, and they put ceramic tiles on me with different symbols. And I wasn't aware of what was going on. I was just kind of going with it, but I knew I was going to die. And so I ended up falling. I remember just like falling into the deepest of sleeps, like I was dying, and then waking up still in the dream, just climbing a cliffside. And then once I reach the top, a hand reaches out to me, and it's just this beautiful light up above. And I reach out, grab the hand, and the guy pulls me up, and Who is it? It's Muhammad Ali, of all people, which I thought was really random.
He should be everybody. He's an ascended master. He should be everybody's spirit guide.
Right? I was like, right on, man. And so I get up there, and the weirdest part about it was that it wasn't. So everything we are right now, obviously you are more in tune with things outside of the 3D world, but most people, they're thinking from their mind's eye, from their mind, everything about the 3D world and everything else. And so that's how they filter life and everything that happens to them. But this was not that at all. It was a soul feeling. It was a emotional feeling. It was a that kind of lens. And it was just so full of love and just all of the people around me. And one of the people that was there, everybody was giving me hugs and everything, came up to me and was like, you know, we have a message for you. And I was like, okay. And they're like, be kind to people. And if people don't know how to show it back to you, teach them, which I thought was like really kind of crazy. I was like, oh, like, okay. I mean, I guess. I'm like, I don't know what that means, but sure. And so, yeah. And so I fall back into my body in the Walking Dead world. I'm still dreaming this whole time. And then I wake up in there and I just run to the bathroom. And then once I get to the bathroom, that's when I like almost pass out, just because I'm like overwhelmed. And then I wake up into my real body. But the weirdest part was when I woke up into my real body, I couldn't understand. It took me about 30 seconds to a minute to realize who I was, where I was, and like what the person that brought me back to everything was my mom. So the thought, I was like, okay, this is my mother. Oh, okay, this is me. Oh, okay, this is where I'm at in the world. This is what this lifetime is all about, kind of thing. And I was like,
yeah, yeah,
yeah, yeah, right? Because you're like, this is just a small. It's not a small life, but it felt small. Like it felt like the person I am now felt like that, like, because I experienced so much more in that dream or whatever it was, that when I came back, I was back in the 3D world. And so everything was, you know, in a small space.
And the energy is just so heavy in this plane of existence. And yeah, so you were astral traveling. It really happened. Yay, which is great to know. It sounds like you're a pretty adept astral traveler.
I didn't know that. I mean, on Dia de los Muertos of all
where
times.
Where the veil is very thin, right? Explain what Dia de los Muertos is for our audience.
Well, so it's just a time where you celebrate your loved ones that have passed, right? And for me, and it's like the... It's a way, like if anybody has seen Coco,
oh, that movie.
Right?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
You watch... Yeah, it kind of explains the whole thing. It's just a way for you to connect with the underworld or your lost loved ones and, you know, celebrate them in a cycle of life, right? The death and the rebirth and all of that. And it was kind of it felt like that. It felt like I went through that whole process in my own mind, my own mind's eye, just the way of me to understand it
and to get to connect to the divine. So there's and this is not my realm of expertise by any, not that I think I have a realm of expertise, but I know a little about a lot of things. So what I kind of know about this space is there's different dimensions. They're all happening at the same time. All times are happening at the same time. So at night, you just are, you know, going and flitting through all these different dimensions. And some people are very just, you know, happy being like, well, that was a dream. It was a metaphor. And that's fine. Like, that's the deal that your soul has, you know, with that time. But then there's other folks who are out actually doing work on the astral plane and having these adventures. And so you're kind of doing double duty, right? You're having your human life here, but then you're also being your soul self out on that plane. And for you to have had the experience to connect with the divine through Muhammad Ali, heck yeah, that's amazing. That when you do come back to this world, it can be brutal. Have you talked to anybody on either of your podcasts who've had like near death experiences?
Not necessarily near death experiences, but just more about the dream and what I had. And a lot of them were saying that, yeah, you definitely connected with the divine, and that a lot of people are saying that it's like you're connecting with your higher self, whatever that means. It's like your soul self, like you were saying. It's basically, it's you. It's just you that's not, you're not, what do I want to say? You don't have the 3D world like influencing anything.
We have physics here, right? And they really hold us. And we have, you know, money systems, and we have social systems, and it's unique in the universe in many ways, but it's brutal.
Trauma, all of those things, right? You have all of these things that affect who you are in this 3D world. When you're there, it's not at all, but you are still you. It is the weirdest thing to try to describe to somebody, but it's also the greatest feeling that I've ever had in my life. And so
how wonderful.
And that's kind of what has helped me bring things back, to bring things, to keep going on these ghost tours and to research the paranormal and have metaphysical guests and all of the things, because I just want to know more because of the way it affected me and the way it brings me closer to that level of being, because that's what it's all about. Like, you're not staying in one spot. You got to,
I feel like, humans spend a lot of time. Sorry, too many thoughts. I will organize. humans find ways to do two things. One, to provide escapism from the dreariness, you know, of this plane of existence. But then they might accidentally or intentionally, or maybe they never had to do the escapism thing, where they kind of raise their consciousness. And I feel like the saying right now is like, it's raising your vibration, but traditionally it's, you know, you're connecting to a higher consciousness. So, you know, initially it could be things like drugs, sex does it. You know, a lot of people who like love, you know, rom-com movies, they're raising their energy, they're raising their consciousness, and they're connecting to something higher than themselves. And we'll get to what we're doing with horror movies here in a second, because I have thoughts on that for sure. But then as you get further into the spiritual path, you realize that like astral travel is a way to go and experience different levels of consciousness. Certainly having access, like going to church can, you know, connect you with the divine, even if it's kind of an echo sometimes, you know, it's like the residual energy of the place holding, you know, that Christ force energy. And then a lot of people who are really deep into this stuff, you know, the gurus, they're, and I don't mean that in an unkind way. They're referred to as gurus, in their cultures, where they're up there all the time. They never come back down here. You know, they can take drugs all day long. It's not going to change a thing because they're already kind of, you know, wired into the divine. And the rest of us end up like, you know, I did ayahuasca a number of times. In fact, Jenny and I were just talking about this on one of our episodes, where those were the best nights of my life because I was not here. I was out playing and seeing and learning and connecting to, you know, and some of it was very dark, but some of it was just unfathomably light and love. And then you got to come back here. And it's kind of horrible. But right. This is, you know, this is the chase, is once you get a taste of that, like you don't want to give that up. So then it's like, okay, how do I keep pushing out of this reality or this existence to see what else? So then I actually think horror is kind of a way to do that. You know, I feel like a lot of folks look at horror as a way of acknowledging our mortality and acknowledging, you know, our shadow selves and, you know, and all that stuff. But man, I got to tell you, I watched The Rainbow and the Serpent and I was like, that's all real. Like, I believe every single piece of that is true. So just like I believe fae are real, like you name it, it's happening. It's a real dragons, you betcha. It's all real. But that also means all the dark stuff is real too. So the people who are venturing into the horror space, I don't know, like you guys are built a little, because I can't do it anymore. I can't watch that stuff anymore. It's too, I don't know. It's painful for me at this point. So like, what's going on with you guys? What are you connecting to there?
Connecting with horror, or what do you mean specifically?
Like it's a device, right? So just like, you know, around the holidays, you watch not Hallmark. You watch Christmas movies, whatever your flavor is, because it helps you connect to that energy, right? Rom-coms or romances, it connects to energy. You know, you were talking about, like, you know, you would go to events and you could feel all the emotions that people were having. So it's the exact same thing, but movies end up being, or books end up being, stories end up being a conduit. Okay. So what is the horror conduit to?
For me, I think it is, for a lot of people, it's kind of a way to connect to these deep emotions or deep fears, and just, you want to be scared, but you don't want to be scared for real. But also, just like with the stories, I think a lot of it has to do with like the paranormal stuff, like the ideas that these things actually do happen, or they are happening, but we don't know for sure to the extent that they happen, like the Mothman prophecies, for example, like that, you know, right? Like, is the Mothman real? I don't know. But talking about cryptids, all of that kind of stuff, it's, for me, it's extremely interesting, because there's as a storyteller, you just love to be able to just do whatever you want. You can, with the knowledge that there are some reality things that go along with it, and it helps people kind of connect with something that's outside the 3D world, right? In a way that you wouldn't be able to do otherwise. I mean, you can do it through other things like books and music and things like that, but with horror and specifically, it's just, it is a way to connect with the darkness of who we are as well, without actually feeling it or like channeling darkness into your home. Like, it's kind of a safer way to you know, be curious about the darkness, right?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah. And then every now and again, it, you know, it crosses through. Jennifer Carpenter, that great story you told about the I'm Still Alive song. You know, that was somebody just messing with her, having a conversation with her. She, whether it was her, like if it had not been her as an actor, somebody who was less sensitive who had come in, would she have registered that? Would, was the presence there so prevalent that they would have been able to push through no matter what? Like your friend with the butter knife, was it uniquely her? Or could it have been you who got the butter knife?
Right. And that's, I don't know. The big thing is that I love about all of this is that there's something extra. It's not just your run of the mill storytelling. It has that X factor that gives people the freedom to choose to believe in whatever they want to believe. And that's the fun in it. Cause like you could all watch the same movie and have 10 different like opinions about it based on what happened. Be like, I don't know if it was a ghost, but it was something messed up. Like there was something going on.
Right.
And then, yeah. And then like the behind the scenes too, like there's all these weird things that happen. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it's not nothing. It's definitely something. And I think that's what brings people in. And that's what, you know, especially nowadays with the horror nowadays, is a lot of it is connecting with things that have happened, things that are real. And those are the ones that really like mess with you, because it's, you're dealing with like real life murder and all of these things, and it can get a little much. So sparingly,
yeah,
with some of that stuff for sure.
Right. So if we have our original thesis where people watch these things because they're trying to understand their own experiences, you know, so whether it's ghosts or if it's, I don't know, you know, violence in their family or a natural disaster, or, you know, just like you said, like all of the heavier things that humans have to deal with. I firmly, firmly, firmly believe that Stephen King is off the charts psychic, because, you know, so I read a ton of him when I was a kid. Of course I did. I think everybody did. And I in particular was trying to connect to, there was so much psychic stuff going on in his books. And I, you know, that really resonated with me. And the older I got, the more I look back, I was like, he knew things. He was writing from personal experience. Like,
oh yeah.
You know, I know there was a decade in there where he wasn't sleeping. But maybe he wasn't sleeping for a reason, you know, maybe he was just seeing so many things and getting as many things onto the page. When I have coffee, well, maybe not coffee, when I have a club soda with Stephen King, I'm going to be like, all right, man, like for reals, were you really just trying to tell all of us like what these bigger experiences are? Because I do think horror a lot of times is people who have done the research, if they've had the experiences, and they're passing it down the road for the rest of us.
Yes, I 100% believe that. They're like, it's just a horror movie, or it's just a book. It's like, no, man, like stop lying to us. Right. I don't know.
No, it's not. No, it's not. No, it's not. Rocking in the corner.
But see, that's why there's so many fans, is because the fans know, like people know, like this is too good for it to not be real. Or, you know, there's just too much that makes sense of all of the storytelling. And it's, yeah.
Yeah. So at what point did you feel it in you that you pivoted where you were like, yeah, it's all real.
Oof.
Everything from the horror stuff, but also like you have these amazing, amazing guests on the Three Haunted podcasts. So shout out. I love that podcast. I learned so much. You bring in such interesting people, and they are talking about really, really fringe things. Yes. So do you sit there ever and you're like, no, or are you at the point now where you're like, I guess. Yep. Okay.
So I think for us, we give everybody their platform and give them a safe space to be passionate about what they're doing and to explain it in the way they want to. And we, without judgment. And I think our biggest thing is we're curious. We're very curious people, all three of us. And we just want to know more, like no matter what it be, it could be talking, you know, dragons that are your spirit guides. It could be talking about people who talk to dead animals or see or whatever. Like there's just so many different things. And yeah, I mean, it's getting harder to be like, nah, that's crazy, because a lot of the people that we have on are saying the same things.
We're all saying the same stuff. It's crazy.
Yes, it's all the same kind of, I mean, very different walks of life, very different people, but they all are saying and experiencing these things. Like it's point of fact. Like, you know, like, yeah, I drop a pencil, it's going to hit the floor, right? Like, it's like that for all of them. And for us, it's just like, well, how do we connect more to it? How do we find our own way to knowing? And that's been the fun.
Oh, I love that. Our own way to knowing. That's terrific. And you are certainly a pioneer in it, between, you know, making space for all things horror on the Tales from the Drive-In podcast, to the Three Haunted, which it really is kind of the more esoteric, paranormal, fun stuff. Then also, like, I see a lot of storytelling in your future. I would love to see you try to, because I do think that some filmmakers do try to bring that dream, that dreaminess, that astral travel-y weirdness that dreams have, like, to a movie. And it's, I don't know if it's ever been successful. But I don't know. Maybe you're the guy. Like, you know, you're the amalgamation of all these different spaces. And maybe it will, you know, come together in a dream where everybody, all those kids at home will be like, yes, that's what's happening when I fall asleep.
Oof. Yes. And I hope so. I would love to do that. Yeah. Cause dreams are one of my biggest passions for sure. Just cause there's so many stories that I'm not telling, that I'm just experiencing, and I get to wake up and write it down and be like, wow, like good job. External or whatever's going on in my head. Like,
right. So. Okay. So that gives me an idea for having a panel of people who, that the dream space is really active for them. Cause I think that deserves lots of time and attention.
Yes.
All right. So to wrap things up, my friend, scariest encounter that you have ever had, give us a ghost story.
So at the Abbey Monastery, again, I went
Canyon City.
The first night we went there, we played a lot of music and we had a lot of good vibes from the spirits there. These children came, the spirits came around and were like saying things to the spirit box or like play more and all of these crazy things. And it was great. We were connecting well. The next night we go into the same room, very different vibe. We start playing music, we start hanging out, and like nothing. There was nothing there. It felt very cold, but it was already cold from the night before. Same kind of thing. But this time it felt almost aggressive. And this spirit that was there was like a big, almost like just a overpowering spirit that through the spirit box said one of the ladies, her daughter's son's name. So it said his name and his middle name, which we never mentioned during the session. And then, yeah. And so, and their whole family, they were going through a really tough time anyway. And so they were vulnerable. And I think that's why the spirit kind of latched onto them. And we had one of those REM pod things that if something goes over it, you hear beep kind of sound, but we put it at the front of the door and that thing was not stopping. Like it was just going on and on and on. Like there was a spirit just standing in the doorway, not letting us out kind of thing. Ooh. And I felt the craziest feeling, like, like if you see something almost out of the corner of your eye, like being thrown at you, and it's that like, oh my God, I should duck kind of feeling, you know, that overwhelming sense of just like you're just adrenaline out of nowhere, and just spidey sense, scared, and just like, what the heck? And yeah, it was that. And I just had to get out of there. And so, wow. Yeah. And that was the first time. Cause I wasn't like scared at all, but just that one, like 10, 15 seconds, I was like, oh my God, like this, something is not right in here. We should probably get out of here. Kind of thing.
Wow. How long did you guys last?
I mean, we were down there for maybe an hour. Well, actually, just so one of the guys that was down there with us before the ghost said the girl's son's name, he actually had to get up and leave. I was like, what are you doing? He's like, I just feel so angry right now. Like, I get, like, he's one of the most kind, gentle person you'll ever meet. But like, he's like, when he was in there, he felt like he needed, like, he wanted to like punch me. Like he wanted to fight me. And I was like, we talked later and he's like, yeah, man, I've never been so overcome with anger and just wanting to just fist fight somebody. I had to get out of there. And I was like, oh my God. So between that, my feeling, and then their feeling, we were all just like, yeah, there's something here. But then we went.
And it was working, you guys.
But we went back down there. We went back down there and we all stood our ground and we're like, we're not going to let you intimidate us. Like you can just basically, you know, go back to hell or wherever. We were just like, no, like we're done with you. We're not scared of you. Mm-hmm. You're not going to push us around. And, you know, we did our grounding and smudging and all that. And at the end of it, when they were doing the smudging, this lady, she was doing our smudging and everything. And she came up to me and she's like, oh, you don't need it. I'm like, what? She's like, oh yeah, you have some guardian angels with you. And I was like,
oh, nice.
I was like, can you do it anyway?
Yeah, no kidding. a little sage burning never hurt anybody.
So she did it, but it was cool. It was scary, but it was also like, well, maybe I have guardian angels with me and that's awesome too. So
yeah. You do. And usually you have to like ask the angels to do stuff. But it seems like they knew that there was some danger afoot and it sounds like they stepped in, which angels will do. They will do if it's a particularly, like, I can't begin to tell you how many times I should have been dead in a car wreck.
Oh no.
And I feel like they've absolutely, you know, saved my bacon.
Well, good. That's amazing. Yeah. And I would like to connect with them more. That's my wish, is to know who they are and connect with them more going forward.
Yeah. And you know what I'm hearing is like, oh, you know who we are. Oh, I love that. I love that was a really scary story, but that it ended up being like this really wonderfully affirming story. You know, the darker things, you know, they want to mess, like the humans in particular, like we're easy to mess with, because we don't understand how to protect ourselves and how to create, you know, spaces that they can't transverse and blah, blah, blah. So that anger thing, that's, you know, that's like the easiest. Either usually it's rage or it'll like fear, like terror. Those are the easiest emotions to kind of punch through the separation between the two.
Yeah.
So you guys were, yeah, you were getting worked over. Good job. You know, you got through it all right. You didn't get punched.
No, it was all good. It'll be okay. So, and I've been back since and we've been okay. So it's just, again, mm-hmm. you just go in with good intentions. It's all about intention, right? Don't go in being a jerk trying to piss off ghosts or spirits or whatever.
Right. Yeah. Oh, that's a great story. Well, thank you for that. Yeah. Wunderbar. Well, I'm going to go ahead and wrap us up. I can't thank you enough. And I always enjoy talking to you. I feel like you and I have, you know, kind of been in the same circles for a long time. And I just want to say thank you so much for coming and being on Light in the Fog. And if we can return the favor, we would absolutely love it.
Yes, absolutely. I love talking to you. There's just so many things that we could get into when it comes to really anything, filmmaking, paranormal, like anything, like your yeah. gifts. It's just so much fun. So I can't wait to get into it more. And with on my side of things, And I think we'll do it with Tales from the Drive-In with my other co-host, Shakira. And I think you'll have fun talking with her because we get into the Moroccan folklore types of things.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it'll be a lot of fun.
I'm so interested in that. Yeah, that's fantastic. Right on. All righty. Well, thank you so much, BJ. Once again, you can find BJ at his, he's got two podcasts. He's an overachiever, always has been. So we have Tales from the Drive-In, which is all things horror, and then Three Haunted, which is, you know, all things paranormal. Yeah, get hooked up, y'all. He's doing some really great work out there. So thanks again for joining us.
Absolutely.
Cheers, meow, meow, everybody. See you next time.